Today's episode of the podcast is proudly brought to you by Arena Australia. Arena are the very best swimming brand in the business, whether you're after the best race suits, racing training goggles, training aids, or even team gear for your clubs. Arena Australia are the way to go. If you don't believe me, just look up on the blocks at the finals of most events at either nationals or international events, and you'll see the Arena logo front and center on the fastest swimmers' race suits. They just are the best. Head over to arenaswimming.com.au right now for all the latest sales and discounts, and let them know that Off the Block Swimming Podcast sent you.
Australia in four, the United States in five.
Off, McKenzie at the bottom, Stubbins above her, Schlanger in six, then to the yellow lane, Henry.
Clean start, Newell's got into the water quickly, but so did Joyce. The short of Germany was away well.
They'll go to the wall all together. Pick that one. Blumer, in fact, ahead of Manuel and Hirisha Menya. What a shot.
Peterson stumps her authority on another 200 breaststroke.
Now Henry is starting to come out. Henry's throwing Linton down. Linton and Henry. Henry and Linton. They hit it.
Jodie Henry of Australia shading. Jenny Thompson has taken the lead here. The Australians have only won this race once. It was with Dawn Fraser in 1956. Henry's moving away. She's going to win it for Australia. This has been a remarkable last leg. Jodie Henry is going to bring Australia home for what will be, yes, victory.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Shannon Rollison Podcast. For another week, I'm your host, Robbie Cox, joined by the man himself, Shannon Rollison. Shannon, mate, how are you?
Afternoon, Robbie. Good. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good.
Fresh as a daisy after that haircut.
Except for you, bloody, putting me on the spot. Just get me. So for all the listeners out there, behind the scenes talk here, we're meant to be on tomorrow. Something's popped up. Shannon's some sort of a car fiend, as people know, so something car related's popped up tomorrow. So I'm having a beautiful brunch with my wife, pregnant, beautiful wife, brunch, just taking her out on a date, walking back, gonna get a haircut. I've got my day planned, it's set. Shannon rings, hey, I got something on tomorrow, you want to chat now? So as we do, Shannon, because we are the professionals that we are, I just said, right, sweet. Luckily, my barbers, the boys, are very, very good, very efficient, very good. They always still trim my beard, even though I say, no, thank you. But it's the extra $10.50 or whatever they get for doing it. Do you know what I mean? I think they pretend. Yeah, well, it's an extra. And I say, no, I'm good, boys. Today we'll just – but I think they pretend they don't know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So next minute, the razor's out. And they just start with a little clip. So it's too late now. We can't go back. So now I've just got to go through with it.
Yeah, I'll play dumb.
Yeah.
Play the
fit. Yeah. No, they do a good job. I love the boys. But, yeah, I think every now and then I say, no, boy, I'm good. And next minute, I'm like, oh, just, all right, I guess this is happening again now. So anyway, I said, oh, I'm feeling fresh. I'm good. I'm ready to rumble. We've got a good episode today, actually. So for anyone who was listening last week, hopefully you remember that we're going to go through the ultimate. Is that what we were calling it? The ultimate men's 100-meter Olympic freestyle final?
Yeah.
And Shannon's been doing his research. I thought I had a bit more time up my sleeve, but I've come up with something on the spot. But it's your one that people want to hear about today anyway, Shannon. Hopefully for you guys at home, if you want to play along and put your own together as well. And off the back of this, maybe it starts a bit of conversation on pool deck, Shannon, with coaches and their assistants about who they'd put in there. And I like it. I think it's a good idea. So we're going to go through that a little bit later. Song of the week's back. The ratings bonanza that is. I actually know this song, so you haven't stumped me this week. I know this song. We've got a few other things to talk about. We're on the taper trail now, leading into age nationals as well. Just come off the back of junior state age on the weekend out of Homebush, which always it lines up, Shannon, something, an event at Homebush with something else going on. So there's the Easter show, there's Taylor Swift, there's Pink, there's all sorts of things going on. I mean, it just is what it is, but we've got the Royal Easter Show kicking off as well. Anyway, I'll back off now. How have you been? How's your week been?
Yeah, pretty good. I've been doing a fair bit of planning. You know, so it came off New South Wales, and we had a bit of a regen week, and so really been looking at this prep to Australian champs, and then we've got one more block, and then we taper. So I've been thinking ahead quite a bit, trying to put the finishing touches to a preparation, adding in a few things that I think we need to do, a little bit more kicking, a little bit more fast pulling. So I've been busy the last couple of days. I've got the two Albury girls coming in this weekend. Their pool shut or something, so Sienna and Isabella are coming in.
Oh, nice.
So that should fire things up Friday afternoon.
Yep.
Bit of a breaststroke set, and so that'll be good. But, yeah, I haven't got anyone going to age. I don't have to worry about tapering. I saw some rankings there last night of age, and that I was having to flick through. So,
thanks to the man himself, John Shaw, and his
his
fantastic spreadsheets and databases.
The problem is he doesn't count if you've swum a time in the ACT. For some reason, it just doesn't count.
He's got something against his down there. Just doesn't count. Doesn't register. Register. Fair enough.
That's my only beef.
There you go, John. I know he's a big listener to the podcast, John. Maybe just add a little bit in there for next time, ACT champs. No, that's good, mate. So, but you guys are going to open nationals.
We're going to open.
For that? You back off a little bit? I mean, you don't want to taper too much. Do you just back off, or do you just keep chugging through and you know what you're going for?
Yeah, we'll back off on the Monday. It starts on the Wednesday. We'll go three solid weeks, and it is what it is. We'll get what we get, and then we've got one more prep block, and then taper. So, yeah, you know, it's an outdoor pool. Yeah,
you love that. You love that, don't you?
You love that. Different if it was the Olympics or something, but
yeah, hey, you love that.
Anyway,
big fan of the outdoor pool. I'm going to send you a photo from night one at age to show you where the medals are taken, just so you can see it straight away. Have they listened to us? Are they putting them out in front of everyone, or are we still up in the back corner?
Yeah, when the Queensland guys were down, Chris Urquhart and Steve Miller and Bobby from Jovanovic from Brisbane Grammar, who else was there? Tim Dilger, he was down. Yeah, we all had a big dig at how poor it was last year, so there's plenty of people that are on our side.
They can't do the same thing. More than enough people would have spoken to him. Surely it's different. Surely. Because it doesn't cost much money to put it somewhere else and just to... Nah,
if they continue to do that, they deserve what they get in the future.
Yeah. No, I think we'll see some change. Now... couple of things off the back of, the week that was, Shannon, a couple of talking points that I want to get into today. And the first one is off the back of our New South Wales Junior State Age Championships. And we have a lot of listeners from all around the world. So to broaden this to everyone, this topic of conversation is just going to be around any junior athlete that's coming through that's, supremely talented and head and shoulders above the others. I mean, we had 10-year-old Shannon or 11-year-old girl make a 13-year-old 100 fly national time already. So she's flying. She's not the only one. There's plenty of, juniors coming through that are just swimming times that you just think, good Lord, look at that. That's phenomenal. My question...
I actually know that little girl.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, so when I was doing some work with the club late last year, she was pointed out to me, and
she's flying. And as I said, you could be listening from America, Great Britain, Denmark, wherever you might be, you might have that junior coming through that's absolutely flying. What do we got to be doing better, Shannon, to keep these swimmers in and around the sport? Because data will tell us, and maybe there's outliers that come through, I get that, but data tells us that more often than not, if you're the fastest 10-year-old, you're not always really there when the whips are cracking at 18, 19 and 20.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's heaps of chat about that. I think the one thing you've got to keep in mind is that, yeah, you're always going to have an outlier. And as a young coach, yeah, it's important to, those sorts of people, you can't base your time going forward. I was having a talk to one of the Queensland coaches about that, and they came up with a name, you know, it was, everybody knows. And I went, well, they're a bit of an outlier. You don't want to base your theory off that person, you know. Yeah. But, you know, when you're coaching, you know, big numbers in clubs and stuff, you're going to have those kids. And, yeah, while we've talked a lot about, getting swimmers through progressively and keeping them improving and all that, I think you've got to recognise that some people, their time is going to be shorter.
Yeah.
They're not going to have a 12-year, 15-year, you know, career, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
So you've just got to try to, not move your whole squad for that one person, but you make adjustments for that one person so that you give them every chance to have their moment in the sun. Now, their moment in the sun might be two or 3 years. They may only win as a 10, 11, and 12-year-old.
Yeah.
But they've probably got the right to, to win those, that's their place. Mm. You know, like I always think, Rebecca Creedy, she's with Ken Woods. Actually, I saw her at, I didn't get a chance to talk to her, but I saw her in Adelaide at the Adelaide Nationals, and I don't even know who she was there with, but she was coaching, and I remember, like, Jody was, like, Rebecca was swimming 56 or 57 when Jody was swimming, like, 62. It wasn't even a race.
Mm.
And Jode would be coming, second or third to her, and it was just daylight. But that was Rebecca's moment. I think she made an Australian team. She was young, so to hold those sorts of people back, I think, is just as much of a mistake as the opposite.
So you reckon you'd rock and roll with that? So if you had, say, a 13-year-old. Girl, 14-year-old girl or whatever that's flying. And we've seen it. Like, we've seen Liesl Jones. We've seen, Ian Thorpe. I mean, obviously he's Ian Thorpe, but he's still got, I don't know if he's still got some records in junior events coming through and school events and stuff like that from when he was.
Yeah, absolutely. Like Alice Mills is, she was definitely the youngest. I had a couple other young ones in distance events that made Australian teams. But, Alice, she would have been like, when she made the team, she would have been 15 for the Commonwealth Games in Manchester. She was on the blocks as a 16-year-old. Mm. And when she made the Worlds the following year as a 16-year-old, and she was winning medals as a 17-year-old at the meet. So, she was young. She's still got the Australian record for the 50 freestyle as an 18 years. I've thought long, quite a bit about, should I have kept her back?
Yeah.
Well, the relay team wouldn't have won in Athens if I had of. Mm. History would be different. And maybe I did do the right thing. Sometimes I've thought, I hadn't, and then I reflect and I think, actually, won a lot of medals at world level. She was number one in the world, blah, blah, blah. Actually, I think I did the right thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? And, we say, because so much of what we learn these days is about long-term athlete development, but then we've discussed here on the podcast, I remember telling you I had a coffee with Alan Thompson and him mentioning to me about some more appropriate athlete development rather than just keeping saying long-term, because at times, to our point now, there might be someone coming through that their time to shine might be the next 2 or 3, 4 years, and you might be doing them a disservice by saying no, we're backing off and we're not going as hard as maybe they could be, because they might have matured earlier, developed earlier, they might be flying. And so it is a hard one, isn't it? Because as we said, so much of what we learn is these days trying to back off a little bit more.
Yeah, I think like most things in life, there's a balance, isn't it? I would say, I think it's just as bad at the other end, you know? Mm. I don't think it's that healthy if you're 26 or 27 and you never had a job before.
Yeah.
You know, I think maybe you got to be looking at that as well. So Chris Nesbitt and I had a chat about that, the other end of the scale as well. So won't get into that.
Yes.
At the moment, but it's probably not a bad topic.
Yeah.
Because at some point you got to move on as well, haven't you? Mm. So yeah.
Yeah, it's just trying to find, as I said, I thought it was just a good topic to bring up off the back of that weekend.
Yeah, I think if you've got the best interests of the person you're coaching, I think you'll do the right thing.
Yeah. So you said, like, a lot of, especially with, you know, you see some of the younger boys, like I got a boy that was 12 and he's dead set 10 times taller than me, and he's got arms nearly bigger than me as well. He's a giant. You know, swimming-wise, he's doing well. He's going good. Is that someone – do you keep him swimming as a 12-year-old boy? Because, you know, you've got 12-year-old boys that look 10 that are training in the pool next to him versus – I think that's some of the stuff that I guess people, coaches like myself, probably battle with, thinking, all right, well, I want to do the best thing for him, but
– He's 12, but – by all, I mean, I haven't seen this guy, but he sounds like he's 14 going on 15.
Oh, he's huge.
Yeah. You know, you probably can't treat him like a 12-year-old because from a maturation point of view, he probably needs to start doing some of the work that a 14, 15-year-old should be doing, because biologically maybe that's where he's at, you know?
So. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm with you. I'm with you. And as I said, congratulations to all the clubs that had a great weekend out there. And then, as I said, if you're not in New South Wales and you're from across the world listening to that, hopefully you got a little bit out of that, because I think there's definitely, these days we're more cautious than probably coaches used to be, more so because, you know, we keep hearing those stories of swimmers, you know, doing 9-10 sessions a week at younger ages and getting flogged and all this sort of stuff. So I think sometimes the tendency, especially with cancel culture these days, Shannon, which I know you love, you're a big fan of cancel culture. especially with that, I think sometimes maybe the tendency from coaches is to not go as hard these days and back off a bit more, because we don't want to be seen to be, you know, pushing kids. So it's just finding that balance, as you said.
Yeah. Yeah. Cancel culture.
Don't get me started on that either. Now, the next thing I wanted to bring up, and we're not going to get into the weeds of how this dilemma has come about, but Kyle Chalmers has found himself on the move, you know, not too far away from Olympics, and he's heading up to Sunshine Coast to train with Ash Delaney, which I don't think came as a huge surprise. He'd been doing a few training camps and weeks and blocks up there. And
well, he's been doing them for quite some time. So.
Yeah, I remember when he was becoming a butterfly. Remember he was putting that weird stuff on Instagram where he's in a cocoon and he was transforming into a butterfly. And
I can't say that about Kyle Chalmers, but
yeah, no,
any swimmer really.
Shannon's big on Instagram, people. If you can find him on there, at 917 Cooper, find him. He's big on there. Does love it.
I think everybody knew that he'd been going out and doing some sort of work with Ashley.
Yeah.
But for a while now, hasn't it been like for the Commonwealth Games? I think the last Commonwealth Games. So a couple of years. I always sort of thought it was for a mental refresh and things like that. And then, so what was it? 2 weeks ago, we had New South Wales Open. And about a week before that, I won't name the coach in the UK, but I keep in touch with a couple of them, and one of them said that he said on our WhatsApp chat that he was going to train with Ash Delaney.
Okay.
And I just laughed. I went, no, you got that wrong.
Yeah.
So that same coach has told me a few things about Michael Boal, and now I'm thinking, oh, he could be right about Boaly as well. So, I'm not going to doubt him anymore. If you want to know what's going on in Australia, ask some of the coaches in the UK.
You've got an inside source. Look at you go. I don't think it came as any surprise, as you said. He'd been doing training blocks up there anyway, and obviously they get along really well. My question to you, though, and I don't want to be negative, Nancy, so what are some of the positives at having a look at a changing in program? Obviously, he's been going up there. We know that, but still his coach was Bish, and his training program and in terms of his foundations were there in South Australia. Now we're shifting that. Where are the positives in that this close to an Olympics, but also where are the things to keep an eye out for if you're Ash Delaney and you've now got Kyle Chalmers training with you, which comes with its own pressures.
Yeah, well, the positives. Can't think of any. it's like catching a hand grenade, isn't it? It could all be okay. Kyle's a seasoned veteran, I suppose. That's one positive. He's a great racer. There's another one. Ash has been to an Olympics as an athlete, but never as a coach. Looks like he'll be going as a coach. If it all works out, it'll be good. And if it all doesn't, I mean, this has all come about. I don't think it was a planned thing, you know.
No, not at all.
And I don't know. We don't know what, is Pete going to help out Ash and, all that sort of stuff. So if it's all good, then it could just be, business as usual, just in a different place.
Yeah,
we don't know. But it's certainly not ideal. And it wouldn't matter. I don't think it's ideal for anybody. If someone came to me this far out and I've been to four Olympics, I still don't think it'd be ideal. So it's got nothing to do with Ash, but it's just not good.
Yeah. Well, what are you looking at there? So let's just say someone does come to you, because, we don't like to always talk on what's going on in people's because we don't know, unless you're on this WhatsApp chat where apparently people know all sorts of things. But let's say we don't know. So someone's come to you and shit's hit the fan somewhere, and now you've got this swimmer who potentially is looked at as a finalist at the Olympics. Is it a matter of, and especially with being, let's say they're an older athlete, so they're experienced, they've been around a little bit, they've been to the big dance a few times. Is it a matter of probably just having a chat with them, sussing them out, how they, feel, what they are comfortable with, and just kind of letting that roll and letting them kind of lead the way a little bit more versus feeling like they're chopping and changing? I don't know. I would imagine it'd be a unique sort of position to be in, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can't say I think it's happened too often. I remember Liesl Jones, the London Olympics, moved to Boaly. I think that was after the trials. If you've got a big group and that you've got, six on the Olympic team, I think you've got to be saying go elsewhere. If you've got no one that it impacts, then I think you can take them on and do the best you can. So I think it's horses for courses. It's a tricky one.
Yeah. Well,
I'd be more inclined to say no, but I know there's a few coaches out there are way more inclined to say yes.
And the difference with Ash is, as we've talked about, is Kyle's been up there more than a few occasions. So this isn't just a random, hey, mate, I need some help. Sure, mate, come up the sunny coast. You'll love it up here. He's been up there. He's done training with them, and they've built, obviously, a good relationship. And there's no doubt Bish obviously would have trusted the work they were doing up there because they were working in partnership and conjunction together for however long. So a little bit of a different scenario, but still, as you said, it's not the most ideal. And probably if it was anybody else other than Kyle Chalmers, people would probably be a little bit more worried. But because he's been there and he's done it, and he always seems, I guess, so in control of his own, you know, races and how he does things, and he's fairly confident in what he brings to the table. He's not, you know, one thing we can always say about Kyle, he doesn't try to be anyone else, race anyone else in anyone else's race. You know, he knows what he does, he backs what he does. So I guess that helps sort of make probably Swimming Australia a little bit more comfortable with what's going on, knowing that it's him. But the Kyle Chalmers chat, and you know, him being, you know, one of the great Australian 100 meter freestylers and former Olympic champion, brings us, Shannon, segue perfectly, because I'm a professional, that's what I do, into the ultimate Olympic 100 meter freestyle men's final. So as we said, you know, you can, I guess it's everyone can do it their own way and how they would like to look at it. Keeping in mind, we've said your ultimate, so it's not so much your favorite or pick your favorite swimmers. It's, you know, what would you, what's the best 100 meter freestyle? You could look in the history of the Olympics. You can only have eight. So for everyone out there, obviously Shannon's about to go through his and but come up with your own. And as I said, feel free to, I love that sort of stuff. Then you get your banter and someone says a name, you're kidding, you've put that person in there, and then it's on, and it's good, and it's good fun, it's good banter. So, you know, we came up with this over a couple of drinks, as is usual. That's when we do our brainstorming. It goes under the business as a business meeting, and as such means we need to come out of there with some ideas for work. So we have. So Shannon, this is your brainchild. You're a big fan of this idea. I loved it. What do you got first? Yeah, well, I mean, I think people care way more about yours than mine. I don't think people are that interested. I'm going to give mine just for a point of difference so we can have a conversation, so it's good radio, but I think more people care about yours.
So we're going with I did this on the weekend, and well, it was sort of in my head after last week's podcast, and went back a little bit in history, and I'm going to go with in lanes.
Yes. So
I'll put them into lanes, and it's interesting. Like, so for about 24 hours, it gets quite hard. You know, the center lanes get quite hard and the outside lanes get quite hard. Mm-hmm. So I actually changed it. And I thought I changed it. Okay, so yeah, it was. Yeah, the center lanes got difficult, and the outside lane got difficult. Lane eight. So,
So what are we going to start with? Are we going to go outside in?
Yeah.
Yep,
so
okay,
we're starting with lane eight.
Yep.
It swapped. It swapped three times.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I couldn't leave him out.
Yep.
So in lane eight, I have Alain Bernard.
Oh.
Not a big fan of that era.
Yes.
But I just felt that he did move it on. You know, he broke the world record a couple of times. So, well, four times. You know, Peter Van Ugenband had it at 47.84, and then he dropped it to 47.6. And then 47.5, and then Eamon Sullivan came in at 47.2, and then Bernard back. It was like a bit of a tennis match there for a while. So he's broken it on four occasions, and he got it to 46.94. So he dropped it, you know, almost a second. So And the guy, I'll do a quick mention. The guy I had in lane eight, and it was toing and froing for about a day and a half, was Kyle Chalmers. So Kyle's my first reserve.
Yeah. Oh, we've got reserves? I didn't know I had to have reserves.
I just wanted to one up you.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, Kyle being Olympic champion, Alain Bernard being an Olympic champion, as of yet, Kyle hasn't broke the world record, so he gets and I had him in there, but he's such a great racer. But yeah, he's my first reserve, and Alain got the nod in lane eight.
Okay, can I tell you my lane eight? Can I tell you, just because I feel like it's probably going to be easier if we just, and I'm not going to give my big behind the scenes. My lane eight, and this might be divisive, but is David Popovici. And only because when I look at how long it was since that 100-meter record got moved from 2009 in the supersuit era, I feel like Chlorine Daddy himself, the Romanian youngster, the superstar, has to get a mention. I know he's not at the Olympics, so I don't know whether that was a part of our criteria that it had to be done at the Olympics.
No.
I'm purely looking at who moved needles and who I want to watch race the fastest.
Yeah.
He hasn't done it at an Olympic Games, so this year is a big one for him. But, I mean, when you look at 2009, it hadn't been touched and moved. I've got to put him on there somewhere. So he's in my lane eight.
All right. Yeah, well, that's a different one. I haven't got him in, so.
No, I don't think many people would. I think I purely, as I said, I just looked. I thought, man, that's a long time since that world record moved. Yeah. He's got to get a mention in here somewhere.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's like the world records, particularly of late, have stood, you know, almost a decade. So they're hot shot world records. There's no doubt about that. Lane one, here's one. I don't think you're going to have him. And he's not just there because he's back for Parramatta, my football team, but it's John Devitt.
Okay.
Olympic champion. And the world record was 55.8. And then it was, I'm not sure, they were time trials. But, you know, John broke the world record twice. He's Olympic champion. And he brought. Got it down. Yeah, this first time he broke the world record, it was at 55.2.
Yep.
And he's obviously the first bloke to get it under 55, so he went to 54.6. So it dropped quite a bit.
Yeah, 1957, and he did that up at Queensland Championships.
Yeah.
And he was 54, so.
He tied Olympic gold in, I'm going to say, 56, Melbourne 56. You know, John, you know, he passed away a couple of years ago. He's a great guy, and I used to enjoy my chats with him. And he loved the sprint. You know that whole era around 2004 when the women were coming through in Australia. So that's my lane one.
My lane one was your lane eight, Alain Bernard. I just couldn't leave him out for the same reason for you. I'm not a huge rap on the supersuit era because I think, you know, if we didn't have it, do those swimmers swim as fast as they do? But, I mean, he just did it consistently that you can't keep him out, and especially the one when he went under 47. Although I just read somewhere, was it unratified or something like that? It was swim was never ratified by FINA as world record since Bernard wore an unapproved swimsuit. So I don't know what that means, but anyway.
Oh, there was a bit of that going on.
Yes, but anyway, so he'd done it enough, and I mean, you can put any suit you like on. You've still got to be moving to be going that quick. So I had to have him in there. So yes, unfortunately, I couldn't have it too many of those super suit era type swimmers around there, but he's in. All right, so yes, lane number seven. What do you got?
The great man, Tarzan, Johnny Weissmuller.
Oh, good you go.
You heard of him?
No.
He was the first man to break a minute. It was a 60.4. He took it down to 58.6, then dropped it to 57.4, also won the Olympics. Probably the most famous 100-meter freestyle Olympic champion ever. So I couldn't leave him out, and I gave him lane seven.
Okay. From the great country of United States of America.
They feature quite a lot, don't they?
Mm. Yes. So, I must admit, I did see him. I did see him on there. He did that 1922. 1924 is when he took it down to 57.4. So definitely earns his place in a final for sure, especially as we said. A lot of mine and yours obviously is more just looking at breaking ground and who could move needles and push the envelope of what was possible. So, good one. Very good one. Mine was a little bit partial to the Aussies here. I had to put Eamon Sullivan because I just think he's pretty quick. It's hard to keep him out of, especially around. It's hard to keep him out. I mean, you look at it.
Very quick.
He's pretty, you know, he knocked it off twice. I know it was in the same Olympic Games, but I think he did it in a relay, and then he did it in the semi final. He went 47.0. So as I said, keeping in mind, I didn't have a lot of time. I had to put this together quickly. I was like, I want to give a nod to the Aussies as well. So I wanted to make sure Eamon was in there, but very, very fast, deserves a spot in there. What do you got for lane number two?
Lane two, Jim Montgomery, first man to break 50 seconds. So 49.99.
Yep. Did it at Olympic Games, Montreal.
Yeah. So he broke Mark Spitz's world record and 51.1 and then dropped it down to a 50.59, 50.39, 49.99. Yeah. So, and he, you know, obviously an Olympic champion as well. So I couldn't leave Jim Montgomery. And I remember as a young kid always remembering who was the first man to break 50.
Yep.
I think at that time, you know, Australia still hadn't done it and didn't do it until Andrew Balvin in the very late 80s. Can't remember if it was 88 or 89. So, you know, Jim Montgomery, 1976, impressive.
Yeah, no, very. My number two was Mark Spitz. Just having a look, as I said, and I had to quickly do it through the records, but consistently kind of in there and around, especially for the early 70s, taking it from that 52 down. And I don't think he got under, well, I don't know if he got under 51, but he certainly took it down to the low 51. I think
51.2 he took it down to. He dropped it a second. And interesting, like my lane.
Very decorated.
Well, he was the greatest Olympian for, you know, most of my life until Michael Phelps, isn't he? So seven gold medals in 72. I've got Mark Spitz, lane six.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're pretty close on some of them. I just, I didn't go back as far as you did in the archives. What do we got? Yeah, we're going six. Oh, so that's, there you go. Mark Spitz is your number six.
Yeah. Lane six. Yeah. What's your lane six?
My lane six is my mate Michael Klim. I had to put him in there.
Oh, you have got some Aussies in
here. I had to put him in there. That's it, though. That's it for the Aussies. But it was purely from my fandom growing up. That was the era that, you know, swimming was prime time, and he was a superstar.
Yeah, he had the straight arm.
Yeah, and he had the straight arms going, and it was all happening. So I had to put him in. I thought having him next to Eamon was good too. But yeah, no, that's. I thought I had to get him in there. 48.18, I think he went in Sydney.
Yeah.
In the lead off to the relay. So, and then obviously Peter van den Hoogenband dropped it again. But I just, as I said, I wanted to get a couple of Aussies in there. And yes, I could have gone back in the archives. But as is the nature of what we're doing, you know, you've gone back in the archives anyway. So, Yeah, no, Michael Klim is my number six. Who have you got in lane three?
Yeah, so we're getting into the big gun. I mean, they're all big guns, aren't they? They're all Olympic champions. They're all broken world records. And, you know, there's obviously other people here who have broken world records as well. But these guys have done both. They've won the big race and they've, and most times have been significant world records, haven't they? So, yeah, so we're getting down to the top three. And I changed this a little bit as well. So I've got in lane three, and I swapped this, but lane three, Matt Biondi.
Lane three is my – Matt Biondi's in my lane three as well. Mate, you should be on TV with the way you drew that out with the suspense. Yeah, no, Matt Biondi, first world record 49.24 in 1985, all the way through to 48.42 in 1988. So, you know,
yeah, he really
but over a consistent amount of time, didn't he?
Yeah, he dropped at 0.9. And yeah, he just took it to another level, didn't he? Yeah, he won five Olympic gold medals in 88. He was trying to beat Mark Spitz. He got second in the, I think he got second in the 200 free. He got second in the 100 fly. So he almost did it. The he was, you know, 6'7" or something like that. He was just, you know, poster swimmer of the 80s, really. I can't think of another one. And he was 1991 world champion in Perth as well, and he was going in as the favourite for Barcelona in 92. Now we talked about Kyle. So just not long before the Olympic Games, Matt Biondi switched coaches. And I'm not 100% sure. He may have even tried to coach himself at the end there. In those last few months or weeks. I'm not 100% on that, but he definitely left his long-term coach. Lane five.
You're doing all right. I was going to say, you're doing all right in swimming if you've got drills named after you this long after. Like, we still do Biondi. You done Biondi, the butterfly drill?
Yeah.
Same as like pop off. Anyway, lane five. Oh, what do you got? Lane five. Here we go.
So lane five, and I had Matt in here for nearly a week. Matt was in lane five.
I love how much time and energy and thought you put into this. I applaud it.
I got my
And I've done it in 10 minutes, and we've nearly got the same ones at the back end of this.
And myself, you know, I'd be like doing a set like 30 50s or something, and after about 10 I'm thinking about this final, you know. And I went back, I wrote it in my logbook.
So lane number five,
he only broke the world record once. He broke Matt Biondi's world record, and he held it, you know, for 6 years, so it was a significant world record. But he got the nod on Olympic champion in 92, Olympic champion in 96, medalist in 2000 in a pair of old Speedos. Well, they could have been arenas, but, you know, they certainly weren't the new. Yeah, you go back and have a look at that 2000 final, and it's like some bloke's turned up to a car race with a horse. So it's Alex Popov, you know, great guy. Yeah, I mean, we talk about races. There's a bloke who could race. I mean, he won, you know, his last world championship was in 03 in the 50 and the 100.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he didn't make the Olympic final in 04. He was there at his fourth Olympics, but he was world champion going into that. So just a dominant competitor.
Well, and as we spoke about, just stood the test of time, the technique, the efficiency, the still gets spoken about today. with a lot of the older coaches who are, you know, trying to talk to their swimmers about technique and different drills and things to do. And, you know, really nice guy as well. So, yes, he's not my number five. But, yes.
Who's your number five?
My number five, and again, you've got to keep in mind my fandom years and when I was a big fan of swimming, is Peter van den Hoogenband.
Yes.
He's my number five. I thought I was a huge fan of his and Inga de Bruin as well. We've talked about her on the podcast before. Coming through, also love sitting with Sander and having chats about Peter van den Hoogenband and back in the day and when he was training and when Peter was at the height of his stardom over there as well. But, you know, he was absolutely a champion, went 47.8. He broke that barrier of the 48. He did, as I said, in Sydney 2000 in the semi-finals. I couldn't keep him out. And I don't know, as I said, that's where it becomes a little bit subjective because I lead more towards my fandom of swimming versus, you know, probably there's probably more decorated than Peter van den Hoogenband for sure.
Yeah.
Over the time, but, yeah, I'm a big fan.
Yeah, it does. I mean, so am I, and I had my lane four was Peter van Hoogenband, you know, so.
There you go. Yeah.
I mean, 47.8.
Yeah.
I remember when he did that. It was just a phenomenal. And then he won the 200 at that Olympics as well. He then backed it up in 2004. So similar to Alex, dual Olympic gold medalist. But, you know, like I think, you know, thinking there, I could see how you could have Alex in four and Peter in five.
And that's exactly what I had. Alex Popoff is my number four. And purely because I just think his name has stood the test of time in terms of...
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Just the history of... And as I said, the Peter van den Hoogenband, for anyone who grew up in that era and was a fan of swimming, if you coached, if you swam, everyone's going to know him. But Alex Popoff kind of transcends... swimming a little bit more. You don't have to have grown up in that time. A lot of people still know about him, the legend of how he swam, and that. Mm. Does that make sense? So that's kind of why he landed as my number.
Yeah,
number one.
Interesting. I mean, you just thinking here while we've been doing this, you know, like Peter was 100, 200. You never saw him much. He'd be in a final, but you never saw him much in that. Among the top 50 guys.
Mm.
So he was 100, 200. Alex was 50, 100. And then Matt Biondi was 50, 100 and 200.
Mm-hmm.
So at the highest level. So, you know, probably the most diverse. And then he did fly. Is probably, you know, it's Matt Biondi for sure, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, he went back. He went under 22 back in the 80s, and he got second in 147 to our own Duncan Armstrong in that 200. So
yeah,
he's probably the most versatile. But maybe that versatility was why he didn't go any quicker in the. Yeah, maybe if he was racing, it would have been. How good would it have been if he was swimming a decade later? Ooh.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. I mean, how just even your final or mine is, I mean, it's when the whips are cracking, it's going to be a fantastic race to watch. And for all of those, I usually cop a bit of stick, Shannon, from the American fans because, you know, so I've got some Americans in here and you do too. I'm assuming maybe some of them might have their American heroes a little bit higher up than we have. And that's all good. As I said, that's the whole idea of putting these things together. Is that everyone's got their own and it creates conversation and it gets you thinking too. And it gets you, as you just said, like, right, that one was a 50 and 100 swimmer, but he was a 100, 200 swimmer. And how would that look? And
yeah, well, I've got half the field are Americans, we've got three Europeans and one Australian. So I think, yeah, Probably John Devitt would have surprised a few people. They might have had Michael Wendon in there.
I was going to say, I'm surprised you didn't put Michael.
Yeah, I looked at him.
Yeah, I looked at him, you know, just didn't
he
fit the criteria.
he's probably second reserve behind Kyle. And maybe he should have been first reserve in front of Kyle, who knows? But yeah.
Well, and that's what I said.
Certainly
Like, the,
on the
yeah,
books for a bit.
there's no right or wrong. It's just get your list together and then start conversations. But and I think the only other thing I would say is if you're putting your list together, have a fair idea of why you put someone somewhere. Like, at least you might not agree with why I put David Popovici there, but I just think, man, you've got to put him somewhere. He moved that hadn't been a world record for since 2009.
Yeah, no. To beat that super a 2000, whoever beats a 2009 world record is a massive world record.
He's still got to do it, but it'll be interesting. But no, I like that. I did. I wish I had more time to kind of. It was kind of thrown together for me at the end there, but.
It'll be a great race come Paris, won't it?
Oh, for sure, for sure. There's especially since the Chinese swimmer Pan threw his hat in the ring and knocked off that world record, and then so you've got him potentially. But there's a thing, and we've seen it before because he didn't do the greatest individual event. So, you know, how many of these swimmers are going to be in the final, ready to go? And does it come down to the
Well,
old
I
boys?
think my prediction is someone's going to miss.
Yeah.
I think someone's going to miss the final.
Because
So,
what, they get too cute, they overswim it, they worry too much. What are they missing it for?
I just think it's going to be that close that someone will misjudge or not quite be on their day. It's going to be tight. Oh, okay, here's a question. When are they going to bring in is it the thousandths? So you know how we go like 47:84. And there's been a bit of chat about going to, what's that? That's hundredths, isn't it? Yeah.
So bringing in, okay, going
Bringing in a
further.
third number. I mean, it happens quite a bit. There's ties, there's your swim offs. It's happening more regularly now than I think has been in the past. So.
Are you saying they talk about bringing that in to save swim offs so you don't have to worry about re-swimming things if they just go to.
Well, I think there's enough of them now that you could do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think most people would go, yep, fair enough.
Yeah. No. Well, it's got to progress at some point. We can't just keep doing what we've always done. So if they've got the technology and it's accurate enough,
Yeah.
why not? I mean, it's there. But yeah, no, you're right. It's going to be a fast final in Paris.
Oh,
That's
I
for
think it's going to be
sure.
a fast semi.
We might even have to relook at our. I mean, if Kyle wins, does he come off the bench?
Oh, if Kyle wins, he comes off the bench.
Yeah. All right. There you go, Kyle. I know he's a big listener to the Shannon Rawlinson podcast, and he'd be filthy that he was first reserve.
Well, he's silver at the last Olympics, so that'd be three. Not many people, if any, can get on the podium three times.
Yeah. Well, it's also a testament to himself because all of mine were needle movers. And for him to nearly get on the list of mine and nearly get on the list of yours is a testament to just the competitiveness and how good he is. I know he's an Olympic champion and he's always been fast, so he's in and around those world records, but he's never moved the needle, nor has he had to need to at times. He just kind of does what he does and he just does it better than anyone else around him. So it's a testament to, as I said, his competitiveness as a swimmer and just what we think of him. I know Bobby Hurley wraps him deluxe and loves him in any race that he's in. He's backing him because he just thinks he's a racer. There's not many people who own that moment like he does.
Yeah, no,
So,
very true.
all right. So Kyle, there you go. You get on the podium and you're in Shannon's final. I'm sure he'll be wrapped for that. What are we going for next, Shannon? What's the next event that we're going to talk about and put
Oh,
together our list?
I haven't I haven't given that any thought.
Uh-oh.
All right. We'll have to have a chat about that.
Okay. Yeah, we'll chat. We'll discuss. We'll discuss.
For everybody.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, they'll be one of. I think it's got to be something that we're going to be looking forward to at the Olympics. I mean, not that we're not looking forward to anything. Not looking forward to anything, but yeah, some of those big ones. We'll try and pick something like that. So maybe the women's 400 free.
Yeah, or two.
Yeah.
No, Shannon wants the four. I think everyone already knows what's coming next. No, that was good. Now, this Shannon's song of the week this week. As I said, it's a ratings bonanza. People love this. People actually skip forward all of it and just get to this last bit just to see what the song of the week is.
Yeah, well, it's sort of, I picked it this week because, economically everyone's been doing it tough. We spoke about the Brisbane Olympic Games last week. It's been in the media for the last few days again.
Yeah. You've
got ex-athletes throwing bombs, some saying it should be in Sydney. It's all about been about money. Brisbane's obviously, like most places, tight on their spending. So this is what I thought, is a good segue for this one.
Yeah, well, I mean, they must listen to the podcast too, Shannon, the Queensland government, because you were the one that said, why aren't they having it out at, what's the joint called?
QE2.
There you go.
Yeah.
And now the plans have come out that if they're doing it, then that's where they're going to renovate and get done up. It's going to be the smallest, is it the smallest opening ceremony crowd?
Well, they're saying the opening ceremony at Lang Park, Suncorp Stadium.
Okay.
And I heard that this morning, and that would be quite small. But the track and field will be out at QE2, which is where they had the 82 Commonwealth Games.
Yeah.
I think I did say that, last week. And they spent millions getting some people, and they should have just given me a call.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's, you are getting on so many advisory boards and committees these days. It is, it's not even funny, but... do you say Suncorp for an opening ceremony? Is it not the Gabba?
No. The Premier, they were interviewing on Channel 2 this morning, and he said Lang Park, Suncorp. They're going to use the Gabba for something. They're going to do something with that, but I don't know what.
Well, that's not traditional at all.
Is Suncorp bigger than the Gabba? I think it is.
It's around 50. I think it holds about 50,000.
I'm not sure the Gabba does hold 50. I think that's why they were wanting to make it, expand it.
Yeah, so, but are you going to get all the athletes in there? I'm looking at just more the field, like the ground itself. Like it's not.
Yeah, I know.
They pack that place out with athletes and Brett. Like that's, anyway, I don't think that works.
I was surprised, but anyway. Maybe he got that wrong. Who would know?
I don't think logistically. Don't exactly. Well, it wouldn't surprise you, would it?
No.
Someone might have said, they're going to Suncorp. Isn't that Gabba? Oh, yeah, that's right. It's the Gabba. Sorry, mate. Yeah. Now, I think the seating at the Gabba is a little bit less, but it just makes more sense to me space-wise on the field because, as I said, there's a lot going on in those opening ceremonies and closing ceremonies, especially the – What has more, do you reckon, on the field, opening or closing?
Well, closing's a bit more ad hoc. Opening's very ceremony. I mean, I've only done one opening for an Olympics. I tell you what, it was unreal.
Yeah.
I'm so glad I did it.
What do you reckon? They try and stop people from doing it these days, don't they?
Yeah. Basically, if you've done it before, they sort of try and give someone else a go. It's a bit tricky because it's the day before everything starts, especially.
What are you saying as a coach? Your athlete's got a race the next day, but they want to go. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity.
I think if they're a medal, if they could win a medal, I don't think you can go.
Okay.
Because it's a late night by the time you get home.
Yeah. What was the other thing I was hearing, that if at any of the games, once the final, once the ceremony's over or whatever, or once you finish racing or whatever, you're out of there?
Oh, that's for Paris, isn't it?
Yeah, is that what they're doing?
I think so. I think it may have got a little bit better than that. But definitely, you know, if you're a coach, they kick you out as soon as they can.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, we always sort of laugh, you know, so it's athletes, officials, and third-class citizens are the coach.
Well, at least the athlete, as long as the athletes get to hang around there, because, I mean, this is a once-in-a-lifetime. You made the big dance. You want to enjoy yourself. You want to get to, you finish your racing. You want to get around and see some of the other events, meet some of the other big superstars of sports. I mean,
the problem lies with, you know, when certain sports finish in week one, and then you've got week two athletes, and you've got week one athletes running around like a headless chook.
Yeah, that'd be me. That'd be me if I was there. I'd be partying it up. But so I feel bad for that. Well, you know, it's a once in a lifetime. You'd feel dudded if you finished your race and you're packed off on a plane to get out of there because, oh, it's cancel culture. We can't have you out there to be seen to be doing something that might come back to hurt the image of our sport.
Mm.
Oh my God. Just let people live. Just let them live. Don't get me started on all of that. All right. Now, anyway, so good segue. So well done, Queensland and Queensland government. You did a great job up there. And this successful campaign to host the 2032 Olympics just continues to charge on. And, you know, as I said, at 917 Cooper is Shannon's Instagram. If the new Queensland government want to get in touch with him, I'm not going to give out his other details here on air, but if you want to get in touch with him, DM him and he'll give you. Hey, Shannon is not scared to let you know what he's thinking. So he's already set him up, Shannon, the QE2. Mate, would you just have it at Chandler, the racing, or you've got a whole new aquatic centre built?
Well, are they trying to have it in Roma Street? And then people are against Roma Street because it's like the only park in Brisbane or something. So, yeah, I don't know about the pool. I think the latest was, you know, a drop-in type style pool somewhere.
Yeah. Well, as I said, people know where to find him. All right, now I'm going to get this set up. So the song of the week this week is Simply Red. I haven't heard that guy for a while. Is he still kicking around, Simply Red?
Yeah, don't know.
I think he is. I think he is.
I'm not a huge fan of these guys, but I did like this song.
Is it a band? I just remember the guy with the red hair.
Yeah.
Which made sense. And the song, because people are probably wondering, Simply Red, he's got a few songs, pretty successful, but the song is Money's Too Tight to Mention. All right, so we're going to kick that off in a second. I paid for that, $2.19. So there you go. So now that's on the playlist. And I can say that comfortably because I know my wife does not listen to the podcast because if she heard, I was paying for it. And even the kids. Do your swimmers tell you what a peanut you are for paying
all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. My wife once went through and she did a calculation of how many songs I have times $2.19. It was not pretty. It was not a pretty outcome for me. There's a lot of money.
When did you start buying them?
Oh, it was a while ago.
Yeah, so you got to do it over time.
Yeah. Oh, anyway, keep myself
out
of trouble.
You still have them in 10 years. Let's hope.
What, have they got value? I can't say that.
If you stop buying songs,
yeah,
it'll get cheaper over time.
Well, listen, you put your positive spin on it however you want. All right, now, have a great weekend, everyone. Thank you all for joining us again. If you're tapering down, actually, happy Easter. Everything, Easter's coming up this weekend, so enjoy your Easter, although probably for many of us, we're training over the Easter long weekend, so.
Well, normally the H Nationals is on, isn't it, over the
No, well, we're training. I'm doing an Easter egg hunt for the swimmers at the pool, bringing my daughter along, and she's going to help hide the thing. So to just make our way, we find ways to do it. But have a good Easter, have a good weekend, enjoy yourselves, and we'll see you all again next week.
See everyone.
bank to see what they could do. They said, son, look like bad luck got a hold on you. Money's too tight to mention. I can't get an unemployment extension. Money's too tight to mention.
Today's episode of Off the Block Swimming Podcast is proudly brought to you, as always, by ProSwim Workouts. Nico and the team at ProSwim Workouts have been supporters of the podcast from day one and continue to support the show and the coaching community more broadly with their platform, ProSwimWorkouts.com. Head over to the website right now and become a member to receive all the exclusive content, whether it's programming, in and out of the water, thought-provoking articles, or even just sharing of ideas. It is a one-stop shop. And for all those just looking to browse, head over to ProSwimWorkouts.com to find free workouts, podcast tips, jobs available, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? I'll say it one more time. Head over to ProSwimWorkouts.com right now and let Nico know that Off the Block sent you.